Blog Talk Radio.
Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play.
Hey, listen to Inside the Park. Inside the park. The RSV family. My usual suspects with me. Hot baseball topic. We're just going to jump right into it. I always promise.
Gambling? What do you think about gambling?
It's
not gambling when you know you're
going to
win.
He's not coming out late. The RSV family. You're listening to Inside the Park. Inside the park.
Welcome to Inside the Park on the Real Sports Guys Network. This is Phil T from the Tuesday Show stepping in for RJ Page this week. We got a banging show out there, but before we get going, I want to introduce my main guys on the left and the right. First of all, let's open up the door for Hank to walk through. How you doing today, Hank?
Hey, just doing wonderful. It's another day at the ballpark, you know what I'm saying?
I hear you. I know exactly what you're saying, my man. On the left-hand side, on the wing, we got my man Michael Bailing. How you doing today, man?
You know I'm more of a post player. Come on, you got to throw it down low to me.
You're not an inside-out guy, Mike?
I'm sorry. I'm worthless to you outside of 10 feet.
Got you. Certainly something to be said of somebody who knows their limitations.
Yep. I'm very familiar with my limitations.
Well, again, we want to thank everybody out there listening, realsportsguys.com. This show has gained so much steam since you all started here in the beginning of baseball season. We want to thank all the listeners out there for tuning in and being so faithful on a weekly basis. Today we're going to get into Roger Clemens, of course, talk about the Dodger and Red Sox trade. I know both of you all have a lot to talk about that. Then we'll talk about a little bit in terms of some of these pretenders or for real squads in terms of teams that are knocking on the door of the playoff race. But let's get it open here. Roger Clemens, my man was down in Sugarville, Texas, pitching in an independent league, which I hear is the equivalent to a double-A, triple-A type of situation. He came in and threw 3 1/3. He had pretty commanding stuff in terms of his location. He topped out around 88, 89 on the gun, and he threw 3 1/3 scoreless. Hank, I'll start with you. What were your thoughts? Did you watch this? And if you did, were you impressed?
You know what? I didn't watch it. And you know what? I'm not surprised, though. You know, if it wasn't for the whole, you know, steroid scandal about Roger Clemens, we would be talking about him as a Hall of Famer, okay? He had electric stuff when he was pitching, even when he came back the last time. That being said, my concern is as always, he is pitching against double-A kids, all right? And he does have command of his pitches, but, again, he's 50 years old. I guess if you want to say that, okay, he comes up and, you know, in his day and age and he does it for against the Houston Astros or something like that, I guess we say, ooh, wow, but again, I can't get excited about Roger Clemens. And I said this last week, and I'll say it again. You know, that's nice, but, you know, if it wasn't Roger Clemens, we wouldn't even be talking about it.
Mike, are your feelings any different on this situation?
Yeah, to me, it's the same as if Barry Bonds came out and hit 3 home runs in a beer softball league.
Exactly.
If this is just about feeding his ego, when he starts being serious about pitching Major League, that's fine, but as long as he's going to just strike out Joey Gathright, I don't care.
I'm with you all the way on that, Mike, because, see, again, you're talking about some guys that may not see a major league ball field unless they buy a ticket, and then that's in the bleachers.
Yep. So, having said that, you know, what's the big hype? A 50-year-old pitcher, you know, major league pitcher. Look what Jamie Moyer tried to do, for God's sakes. You know, they finally let him get his oldest winning pitcher win and then be done with it. That's just the way I feel about it with Roger Clemens as well.
Mike, do you want to see Roger Clemens on the next level pitching Major League Baseball this year?
No. I don't know that there's a point for any team. You know, we discussed a little bit last week where I think this is just an ego feed for him and for a team that may want to fill some seats, with Houston being the logical team there. But, I mean, other than saying I saw Roger Clemens pitch, you know, what's the bonus? I don't see the point.
Yeah, I was a little bit torn as well. You know, me having such deep Yankee roots, don't throw anything at me. You know, I was so thrilled when Rocket came over in the early aughts and did his thing in the Subway Series and the few years after that. And even when he came back a few years ago, I was certainly a fan of him. But my man's 50 years old. I mean, Satchel Paige is not walking through the door.
Exactly.
So Roger, I mean, he just strikes me as somebody who might be doing this strategically for Hall of Fame votes, to show people, listen, this is what I can do at 50. So let's put aside all these steroids, human growth controversy, and know that, okay, if I did it, I did it, but I was still a heck of a pitcher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but again, like you said, 50 years old, I mean, let him come up. I mean, my feeling is you're talking about a power pitcher now. He's going to come up all of a sudden, and he's topping out at 88, 89. All of a sudden, he's going to become a finesse pitcher. Oh, yeah, I would love to see that. Go ahead with one of these major league with professional hitters, and all of a sudden, he ruins what little legacy he's got left.
So moving on, Roger Clemens, that's something we certainly going to have to keep an eye on. So the big trade, Dodgers and Boston, just in case you were living underneath the rock the last week, here's what happened. The Dodgers got three All-Stars from the Red Sox, Crawford, Beckett, and Gonzalez, plus Punto, and the Red Sox got four minor league prospects and James Looney. That's it. There's not more, just in case you were wondering. That's it. Michael, I'll start with you, man. What does this trade mean for the Red Sox?
Well, I'd clarify a little bit. They got one All-Star. I don't think Beckett or Crawford were on the All-Star team this year. You know, that'd be like me trading Roger Clemens to you and telling you that you got a Cy Young Award winner. Well, yeah. How many years ago? For the Reds, I would say that this is a real signal of a change in philosophy, that they're – I don't know that the organization feels like they can go out and outspend teams and take on bad contracts. So by unloading these guys, I think it means that they're committed not to repeat those mistakes, okay? So I don't know that you're going to see the Red Sox leading the way, you know, signing, Josh Hamilton to a 10-year, $200 million contract. And hopefully, you know, when big market teams make decisions like this, it influences the rest of the league. And I think we all agree that the 12-year, $250 million contract is not good for baseball. It's not smart for baseball teams, and it doesn't lead to competitive balance within the league. So hopefully this is a little bit of common sense coming into play with big market teams, which is great news for the Pittsburgh Pirates, for the Kansas City Royals, that may say, you know what, I'll do a 4-year, $100 million contract, and I can live with that. I just can't do 12 years, 300 when I know you're going to be worthless the last 4 years. So to me, this is just a complete change in philosophy of the Red Sox, and I think it's great news for the rest of baseball.
Hank, your thoughts?
I think that this is just a very clear indication of a changing of the guard. I think that with the Theo Epstein and the manager from last year went out, I think this is what you're going to see. I think that with them bringing in the other players, I think, again, you're looking at Gonzalez, you're looking at Crawford, and again, Beckett. There was some dissension in that clubhouse last year. You're talking about a Boston Red Sox team that was a very, very talented team. Terry Francona, the manager from last year, the manager, I couldn't remember at the time. But the thing is that they were a very talented team. And then they come in this year, they're a very talented team. And they just never played up to their potential. Now, you got players on the Red Sox team, or on the team, Adrian Gonzalez, Justin Pedroia, these guys, Jacoby Ellsbury, these guys were all MVP type of players as early as last year. What this means for the Red Sox, they've got some very nice pieces in place still. You still got Jacoby Ellsbury, you still got Will Middlebrooks, you've got Scirocco over there at shortstop. They can do some things. They see what some of these small market teams are doing. But moreover, I think they're trying to change their culture. I was under the impression that maybe they might want to move Pedroia because he seems to be a real hellraiser in that clubhouse. But I believe that they've got to clean house and try to just retool what they have right now, because I don't care if you bring Jesus Christ into that clubhouse to manage, they're not going to get along with him.
So it begs the question, Bobby V, you think he'll stick around for another year, Hank?
I don't. And the reason why I don't think he'll stick around for another year is just as I said before, Justin Pedroia. I don't think that Bobby Valentine and Justin Pedroia can coexist. You know, there's been a lot going on with this up until this point. You have to understand that Bobby V was very, vocal about the Kevin Youkilis before he moved. You know, and then there was all of this arguing and stuff that you're seeing on TV. You also see Bobby Valentine, really try to hold his emotion because he knows that the camera is on him. So if you're talking about really trying to change the culture, I don't think Bobby Valentine is the manager that's going to help you change that culture and get more professional discipline in that Boston Red Sox clubhouse. So I think that this is a one and done for him, and I think he's back in the press box next year, or he's somebody else's analyst.
What do you think, Mike, about Bobby V? You think he sticks around another year, or you think he's done at the end of the season?
I think the Red Sox have set themselves up pretty well to be able to walk away from Bobby Valentine at the end of the year, because they're obviously redoing things. But I read it a little bit differently, where the team had a choice to either go with the players or go with the manager, and Bobby V was brought on by the new administration to run the team a certain way. I'm not a big fan of his as a manager, but I think by sending his players, shipping them out, you send a very clear message to your team that Bobby Valentine is part of our organization, and he is the type of manager that we want, and he's sending the message that we want, and if you're not going to listen to it, you're out of here. So to me, if you're going to get rid of Bobby Valentine, you tossed a lot of talent overboard. And if you want to keep him, you had to find a way to get rid of those players, and they did that. So do I think he's gone? I'm going to tell you that he's going to stay just because he's part of the new regime, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was gone because they got rid of so much talent, it would be easy to bring in a new manager.
Now, I will say this, though, on that piece, though, Mike, is that, you already knew who your troublemakers were. And I think they knew that at the end of last year. I think that a lot of that conversation between Theo Epstein, Terry Francona, and the owner of the Red Sox had a lot to do with what happened in that clubhouse. And I think that they tried to go as far as they could this year with these guys. It just was not going to happen. Moreover, though, I think that when you look at Bobby Valentine, firing the manager right now really kind of like puts you in a tailspin onto where you can go next year. I think you have an opportunity right now with some young players to do some evaluation. The race is over. This is a good time to move these guys, and it'll be a good time to move Bobby Valentine at the end of the year. They could probably still be evaluating him, but just given who they kept, I just have a real difficult time saying how is that going to pan out. Somebody's going to have to be some real attitude adjustment have to happen in the offseason.
Right. You know what? I was surprised Adrian Gonzalez was part of this deal. You don't hear a lot of bad things about him. He's a solid player, if not spectacular, but he's a solid player that is probably legit for the salary they signed him for, given the economics of the day. To me, he was the real value in this and the player that the Dodgers definitely upgraded with. But if I'm the Red Sox, I don't know that I need to trade Adrian Gonzalez.
You're right, but, again, There's also a real sneaky, I have a sneaky suspicion that, you know, they're going to try to position themselves to still get them another professional major leaguer in the offseason. Who that would be, I'm not exactly sure. I know you had mentioned Josh Hamilton before, but, you know, you got to also look at some other guys that may be out there that they might look at. You know, you've got Jared Saltalamacchia, who's the only catcher that we know of. Mike Napoli is going to be a free agent coming at the end of this year. Maybe he helps try to shore up their pitching staff. Maybe even Matt Cain. You know, he's on a 1 year for next season. You know, maybe they try to get some money to get him up here to try to help shore up their pitching staff. You know, they're going to have some money now.
Right, and you know, I was thinking about that, so I looked up the top free agents for 2013 coming up, and it's slim pickings. And we're talking Josh Hamilton, Michael Bourne, who's going to be incredibly overpaid next year, incredibly overpaid, B.J. Upton, Nick Swisher, Mike Napoli, David Ortiz, Cody Ross, A.J. Pierzynski, Melky Cabrera. I mean, just no world beaters out there. You got one guy on the market, really, and that's Josh Hamilton, that would be a Boston type of, you know, a major signing. And I'm just thinking, they unloaded all this money. Who's going to take the place, really? Is Nick Swisher going to make you competitive next year in that division? I don't think the talent's going to be out there in the free agent market. So maybe this is a rebuilding deal for them. Because, man, there's just not a lot of people they can buy next year.
Well, you know what? You make a good point. And I think if they even look south and see what happened with Philadelphia, you know, they hung on to a lot of those players for a long time, and then all of a sudden they had to do a major dump. So I think maybe Boston is just trying to say, you know what, well, we might as well just go ahead and cut bait now. So that's what I can see that as well.
You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. Phil T. filling in for RJ Page this week on Inside the Park. I'm just enjoying hearing Michael and Hank go back and forth. Just excellent conversation. So this big trade, you know, you guys have been talking a lot about it, and, you know, it makes sense, but I got to throw in this question. When I saw this trade, it made me think of the Paul Gasol trade in the NBA a few years ago when Memphis got essentially no one and the Lakers got Gasol, probably the most lopsided trade of this decade so far. Would you guys put this trade in that category in terms of baseball? Michael?
A little bit. Yeah, it's a salary dump. I think probably maybe the best baseball comparison is the Alex Rios trade to Chicago, where Chicago says, we're not giving you anything for him. You just give him to us, and we'll take on the salary. You're right. It's a complete salary dump. It's not a fair trade talent-wise, and I think it just emphasizes the point, and the Gasol trade is a perfect example where you have a number of NBA teams just dumping salary with the idea that they're going to sign somebody next year that never happens, because really who's going to go play in Memphis as a free agent? Not a lot of guys. So, you know, like I said before, if this brings the rest of the league back into reality about the length of contracts that you're giving to pitchers, I mean, 8-year deals for a pitcher, are you nuts? Are you insane? You know, 10, 12-year contracts on position players, it was just out of whack. And hopefully this is just bringing them back to reality. It's a completely economics move. So I will tell you that, yes, there's a good comparison to it that the Red Sox did not get fair value. They got salary cap relief.
What are your thoughts on it, Hank?
Okay, in contrast, though, guys, this also kind of puts Major League Baseball in line with the NBA. You know, Phil, you made that's a very poignant analogy you made with the Paul Gasol trade. But look at what it does to the Dodgers now. The Dodgers now become the L.A. Lakers or the Miami Heat, if you will, of baseball. Why? Let's look at what they've done all of a sudden. All of a sudden, they go pull Shane Victorino from Philadelphia. They go and get Hanley Ramirez from Miami. And then, lo and behold, they get 3 stars from the Boston Red Sox, okay? You can argue all you want to, but Adrian Gonzalez was one of the top 3 players last year in the MVP race. Josh Beckett is a very established pitcher, okay? And you can see Kershaw, Beckett pitches like he can, okay? Carl Crawford is another player over there that, you know, once healthy, you know, they're going to be loaded in the outfield. This totally changes what the L.A. Dodgers were when the season started, you know. And now you're looking at them as, you know, a perennial power going forward. They're going to be brokers now for years to come. It kind of concerns me now that some of these big market teams, when you start talking about salary dumps, because of the great big salaries, but now you're able to do things after the trade deadline, oddly enough, that something like this happens because they throw little terms behind it, like, oh, put on waivers. But now you look at what the Dodgers are. So the way I see it is that the rich are still going to get richer, okay, and the poor are going to get poor. It's just going to look different, okay? They're just going to throw different terminology around it. So that's the way I see it. I see it almost like a shift toward how the NBA is doing things.
Right. Now, Hank, tell me how this doesn't just make the Dodgers the West Coast version of the Phillies with old guys with big contracts that they can't move.
Well, listen, when you say old guys, Carl Crawford is not an old guy. Okay, Agon, like I said, is an MVP type of player. Now, I understand what you're saying as far as how with Philly, but you're just all of a sudden in the last month and a half of the season bringing all these veterans over. That's just what the Yankees have been doing for years. That's where I see this, you know. And then they get these rental players, if you will, to make a push. I see it more that way than I see what Philly is doing.
Right, right. And the other thing I'd bring up, too, you bring in big paydays, you're bringing in big egos, too. You know?
Right.
Those guys weren't traded because they were great clubhouse guys. They were traded because at one time they were great players and are currently great players. But when great players don't perform well or don't age well, they become really bad teammates.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. And I think there's another caveat you need to look at this, especially with the trade to the Dodgers for those players going to Los Angeles, is the manager himself, Don Mattingly. Now, Don Mattingly, Phil, you know that's one of your boys, Donnie Baseball, out of New York.
Absolutely.
That's right. Now, see, now what does Don Mattingly bring to this whole equation? Don Mattingly were on teams where they brought these veterans in late in the season, and they had to figure out a way to mesh these guys into a unit that made a push in the playoffs. I think that you have to look at that as well with some of these guys. That Don Mattingly is used to that clubhouse where you got all these misfits coming in here, and you've got to turn them quickly into a cohesive unit before the playoff push. I think that makes a big difference with these players. I'm already looking at, you know, what I've seen from Hanley Ramirez. You know, all of a sudden he comes from Miami, and all of a sudden he's acting a fool over there. I kind of sense the same thing with these guys. I think that there was a lot of dissension in that Boston clubhouse. I don't think you're going to see it in Los Angeles. I think you're going to really see an incredible team for the last, you know, six and a half weeks of the season.
So let me ask you this, fellas. These three, one current All-Star, two other guys who have been All-Stars in the past, Beckett, Gonzalez, and, of course, Crawford, and I'll throw in Punto as well. Which one of these guys, and I'll start with you, Hank, which one of these guys do you think will turn around their season and their career to the positive since, you know, after the trade?
You know, I have to go with I'm going to go with Josh Beckett. I think the reason why I say Josh Beckett is because I think Josh Beckett, in my opinion, was a better pitcher in the National League with the Marlins. I think that, you know, getting out of Boston, not being the ace pitcher, that's clearly kept Clayton Kershaw's, I think it gives him an opportunity just to relax and just be Josh Beckett. And I think that just getting away from some of that foolishness and that change of scenery is going to be, you know, more monumental for him than anybody else in that trade.
All right, let's pay some bills. We'll be right back in 45 seconds.
Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the Real Sports Guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
You're listening to Inside the Park on realsportsguys.com. I just want to throw in a quick teaser. Of course, this is Phil T from the Tuesday Show. I'm filling in for RJ Page tonight, kicking it with Hank and Michael. We got a new segment coming out starting tomorrow. Our main man, Eric Hamilton, the fantasy football guru from KZoo, is going to be giving biweekly updates to help you all win your fantasy football leagues. Now, Hank and Michael, full disclosure, what place did you all come in your top league last year? Mike. Yeah.
Bounced in the first round of the playoffs.
Oh, that's depressing. That's depressing. RealSportsGuys.com, man. You got to check out Eric. He's going to be pretty heavy in IDP, individual defensive players. He's going to give you those sleepers, man, that you need each week, Michael. It's almost like he's going to be talking just to you and your six-play squad. Hank, how did you do last year?
Yeah, it was a rebuilding year for me. I didn't do too well, but we're looking to the future.
Appreciate the cliche response, gentlemen. I want you all to be part of the downloaders on realsportsguys.com for Eric's segment that starts tomorrow. Okay? Now, moving back to a familiar sport for you guys, baseball. Michael, I gave Hank a chance to identify which Dodger who was recently traded from Boston who would have the biggest impact and turn around his season or career. Who would you select?
To me, it's a no-brainer, and it's not necessarily a turn on. It's Adrian Gonzalez, who's put up very good numbers, you know, for the last 4 or 5 years. I don't know that he has anything to turn around. He's been a productive player. He's going to continue to be a productive player. As far as, you know, Beckett goes, to me, that's like the guy last year who drafted LaDainian Tomlinson in the third round because he's drafting on his name. Beckett has not been a consistent pitcher 2 years in a row in the last 5 years, you know? So, if anything, it's the culmination of the Kevin Brown contract 15 years ago, the first $100 million pitcher who signed it when he was 37 years old. You know, unless you're Barry Bonds, and RJ's not here so I can say it, and you're all up with whatever, you don't get better at that age, especially if you start having injury issues. Carl Crawford may be just fine. I think he needs to get healthy. But to me, who's going to have the best career going forward? Well, Gonzalez, because he hasn't really had a hiccup.
So there were some reports in the news that the Dodgers had asked about CC and Teixeira from the Yankees. I'll throw it to you guys. You throw on your GM hat. If you got the option of getting CC, Teixeira, or both, Hank, which one would you have taken if you were the Dodgers GM?
At this point, I would have tried to get CC Sabathia. Still a very productive pitcher, playoff proven, and you don't win the playoffs if you don't have good pitching and good defense. We've talked about this all season long. And right now, especially with Chad Billingsley going down for the 15-day disabled list, and he may be out for the year because he's got elbow issues, you know, you got to get as much pitching as you can. And then I'm here today that their closer is out for the season with heart condition. So, you know, while we talk about how good the Dodgers look with their everyday players, they need pitching. If I had an opportunity to get a CC, I would have tried to work something out and get him to the Dodgers. But I'm surprised with the Yankees. Why would they even offer him up where they're at right now? I mean, why would they even listen?
I wouldn't listen because CC, without CC, the rest of your rotation is questionable at best.
Right.
Very questionable. So I'm not sure why they've entertained it. And it sounded like they didn't. The reports are just simply the same that the Dodgers asked. Michael, out of those two players, Big Tex at first base and Big CC on the mound, if you're the Dodgers GM, which one would you rather have?
You're going for CC because he's the number one starter. If I had to choose between that and the Boston package, I'd pick the New York package because I've got a number one starter who's included in that deal. And I think Teixeira is definitely comparable to Gonzalez. So he may be a couple years older, but he's a real strong player. And you know, my thoughts on this deal, I don't think it's really focused on winning this year. I really don't. And they haven't had a big splash on that lineup at all. For the Dodgers, this is about selling tickets, getting people excited for next year. When Beckett hopefully comes back healthy, his head clear, you got Crawford in the lineup. But right now, and I think the Marlins are a great example of this, just because you sign a bunch of big-name guys doesn't mean you're going to play well as a team, that you're gonna you know, gel, or that they're going to produce. So I don't have high expectations for them this year. Yeah, on paper, if this was 2008, that's an awesome lineup. But it's 2012, and those guys are all – here's the thing. Those guys that they have on the roster now, at least four of the new guys, you know, Ramirez and the Red Sox guys, are all there for a reason. And the reason is that they didn't produce this year what they were supposed to, and they weren't earning their money. All four of them, you know, a little hesitation on Gonzalez. So let's not pretend that you got four guys that are perennial all-stars that are producing at this pace right now. They're not. They're not doing that at all. You're buying them low, and I think it's unrealistic to expect them to come out and produce and push these guys to the playoffs.
However, I don't believe that, you know, when you got these guys, Mike, that the idea is that they have to come in and be the savior. You know, when you look at the Dodgers and you just and you look, first of all, if you look at the whole National League West, it, you know, it's tight. It's 3.5 game difference. And then the Dodgers, I believe, is 2.5 games out of the final playoff spot over in the wild card. You've already grabbed Hanley Ramirez. You've already got Matt Kemp, if you can keep him healthy. You've already had a lineup and a team that's been playing some pretty solid baseball all year long. If these guys are able to even produce just a fraction of what they are, I think that for this year, it's going to give them a playoff opportunity. If you're looking at the Dodgers, and you're looking at just the fact that, you know what, we're in it, we're getting into September next week, where we can make any sort of push, especially with Melky gone out of the Giants rotation, out of the Giants lineup, with Melky Cabrera gone. That gives them as much of a chance to even win to get into the playoffs or even take the division from the Giants. The Giants are going to have to do it, you know, with basically what they have. So any firepower right now the Dodgers get is going to be a bonus for them. You're right. It's for next year. But believe me, that ownership team is trying to win right now.
You're right. It was the shortest line between 2 points. I agree with that. That you're not going to get some, you know, third year up and coming superstar, and you just can't. But to me, they became. I hate to put another metaphor out there, but they're the Boston Celtics of the major leagues. You know, they're just collecting wily old veterans to come out and push them over the top, and hope they can, you know, recapture some magic. And we see, you know, how well that worked out for the Celtics this year, and the Knicks are another example of that too. You know, that are just trying to throw guys out there and say, hey, come and produce. But I agree with you. You know, the quickest way to add talent to your roster this year was to ghastly overpay for some people who aren't producing and hope that they do well.
One more point I want to make on this though, when you look at Adrian Gonzalez. Adrian Gonzalez is still producing at a high level, okay? You look at Hanley Ramirez. He was still producing at a high level to save part of this season, okay? You look at a Carl Crawford, and granted, that whole Boston experiment was a bust. But, you know, on the surface, you still have a young player that's got some very good tools, okay? And you don't know, and he fits very well in that outfield versus Shane Victorino, who also is a good ball player. What's going to hurt the Dodgers down the road is going to be their pitching staff. Now, I think they're going to be able to outslug some teams down the stretch to maybe sneak in. And you have to really watch what the Giants do. The Giants are going to go as far as their pitching goes. But I can't make that Boston Celtics, you know, analogy simply because you've got some guys that were just producing. Now, you can say what you want to about Nick Punto and Josh Beckett, but you've got some guys in that trade that are actually producing and still producing, and this might be just what they need to just, you know, get the Dodgers over the top.
Right, and let me clarify something too. Carl Crawford, 31 years old, right? Josh Beckett, 32 years old. Mm-hmm. All these are on the backside of their careers. There's no young guys that were part of this deal.
Just major leaguers.
All right, but I guess what I'm saying is you've got nobody that you expect in 5 years to be producing at
well,
any.
Well, no, but I mean, you know, but that's what you, you know, you again, this ownership team wants to win right now, mm-hmm. okay? And if you can get wherever you can get in the next 2 or 3 years, okay, and you got the money, all right, you still got, we just got through talking about the free agent market. Now, you're right, it's going to be scarce this year. Okay, but maybe there's going to be some deals to be made, you know, and they've got some money that can do some things. I'm not really, you know, convinced that what we saw this past offseason with the 12-year, maybe we won't see 12 years, but I'm not convinced that you're not going to still see some long, ridiculous contracts simply because you've got some players out there, and while we've had a real fun season with some of these teams we didn't expect to produce to become contenders, they're going to have some players on those teams that, quite frankly, they're not going to be able to keep. And these teams are going to do some of the same things to pull some of those guys. So I'm not really convinced that whole piece, just because Boston's doing a dump because they haven't won a damn thing in 3-4 years.
Mm-hmm. That's around the horn. The fellas have broken it down for it to ever be broken. The most lopsided trade of the decade, in my opinion, the Dodgers and Red Sox trade. Fellas, before we move on, you know, Joe Mauer was put on. Joe Mauer of the Minnesota Twins, the star of the hometown guy, the guy from the Head and Shoulders commercials. He was recently put on waivers today, either today or yesterday, and he just cleared waivers a few minutes ago. This was a surprise to me. I wanted to get you guys' thoughts. Michael, I'll start with you. What were your thoughts when you learned that Joe Mauer was put on waivers?
You know, I don't take it personally. Teams have been putting high-name guys, big-name guys on waivers for years. I remember the story came out when the Reds put Griffey on waivers in, like, 2003. There's no risk. You know, if he gets claimed, you can always pull him back. And if he doesn't get claimed, well, you know, we're willing to listen, right, on anything. As far as Joe Mauer goes, you got a catcher who's not hitting anywhere near his power numbers, and his secondary power numbers as far as doubles goes are also down, and he's owed $23 million for, I believe, the next 8 years annually. And so the Minnesota Twins are going to be hobbled by this contract, and even if you move him out of the catcher position to first base for his health, he just doesn't produce the power numbers that you'd want out of that position to make it worth your while. So I'm not surprised at all. And, you know, they'd have to be blown away. He's a hometown kid. That's probably the biggest surprise, right, that he's kind of the face of the franchise, the hometown kid. But then why wouldn't you put that out there as bait? If the Dodgers are buying up bad contracts, I got a couple. Check them out.
Just going to throw it out there, throw it on the wall and see if anything sticks.
That's what waivers are for. That's exactly what waivers are for.
So Joe Mauer, like you mentioned, he's owed $23 million, actually through 2018, so 6 years. Nonetheless, a significant amount of time. Here's a guy who only played 82 games in his first season after his mega contract. But the thing here, Hank, is that the Twins really took a risk here because Mauer is still extremely popular in the Minnesota area. If you were to do a Gallup poll on this guy's approval rating, yeah, it may have went down from 99%, but it's still in the high 80s, low 90s. You think this was a risk for Minnesota from a PR perspective?
I don't think so, only because when you look at the Minnesota Twins, they are not the Twins of old. Okay, this is not the Minnesota Twins team that was winning the Central every year. And you look at Joe Mauer, his numbers have been going down, you know, progressively over the last 3 seasons, and he can't stay healthy. And here it is, you owe him $23 million, and you have to look at your roster as a whole and ask yourself, okay, to pay him is going to do us what? You know, chances are they're going to finish last this year. They finished last year. It's time to rebuild. It's time to move on. We've been talking about this all evening. Minnesota, it's no surprise. They want to see what sticks. They want to see what they can get for him. You know, yeah, he's a hometown kid, and guess what? He did his due for the Minnesota Twins, and they should say to him, you know, bless you for everything you've done for us. But now it's time to move on. And that's just the way I see it. And Mike makes a valid point. You're not to move him to first base for his health or anything else. If you were going to contend next year, it would make sense. But it doesn't make good economic sense when you're simply not going to be able to contend this year or maybe even next year. So I think it's a good move by the Twins and see what they can get, and it's time to move on.
And Phil, I got a question for you. As a baseball fan, do you root for the name on the front of the jersey or the name on the back?
Typically the front.
All right. And if I'm a Minnesota Twin fan, I'm a Minnesota Twin fan. And if Joe Mauer happens to be on my team, great. If him not being on my team makes my team better, I'm a bigger fan of that.
So also, too, to that, when you are the Minnesota Twins, and we've all had, you know, if you've had that player that you love so much, but your team absolutely sucks, you almost feel like it's, you know, for the sake of that player, let him go somewhere else so he can at least try to win. You know you're not going to win over here. You know, as fans, we kind of think that way. We don't want to say that, but it is what it is. I remember when back in the day when Cecil Fielder left Detroit to go to New York. Detroit wasn't winning a doggone thing, but he went to New York, won a world championship. It made sense for him. It made sense for the team. Same thing here.
You know, one of the things that I think makes this situation a little bit different, and both you guys have brought up some very unique and strong points, but I think one of the things that makes this situation different is that Mauer is a hometown kid. He's from the Minneapolis area. Think about this. What if the Cavs would have got bad? The Cleveland Cavaliers just got bad, okay? And they traded LeBron. They tried to get rid of LeBron. That's the thing I really think about. Cleveland probably would never have forgiven that. Anybody else, you're right. They'd love to see them move on to win a championship somewhere else. But I think it's something to be said about hometown kids. What do you think about that, Michael?
You know, I would tell you, first of all, different sports, right? I can win with LeBron and four players. I can't win with Joe Mauer and eight players. I can't do it. It doesn't translate. But I'll give you a good example. In 2002, I'm sorry, it was 99, Barry Larkin, hometown kid from Cincinnati, Hall of Famer, was coming up for his contract here. And Barry had been really known for understanding that Cincinnati was not a big market team, so he did not demand high dollar contracts when he came up for free agency in the mid-90s and early 90s as well. He really signed a hometown friendly contract. And so he was 36, 37 years old in 99-2000, and the Reds, which were still a small market team at that time and had a good young team, signed into a three-year, $27 million contract, and Barry never put up the numbers that he did before, and the Reds were hamstrung with that contract. They did that out of respect and loyalty, but was it the right decision for the team? It probably wasn't.
You're listening to Inside the Park on RealSportsGuys.com. Fellas, we're going to keep it moving. We are almost to the game, 80% into this current 2012 season. Let's talk about GMs who have done a phenomenal job, and I'll start with you, Hank. Who would get your early vote for GM of the year?
Well, you know, I would have to look at the Washington Nationals GM, Mike Rizzo. And the reason why I would look at Mike Rizzo is more from a historic standpoint more than anything else. They've done a phenomenal job, that whole organization of getting some young players with Bryce Harper, Steven Strasburg. But he's also done some nice things with some veterans on that team as well. But moreover, you're looking at a Washington National team that's going to more likely win the East, make their first playoff appearance in franchise history. I think that you have to look at the whole body of the work of the GM when you look at that. While we can look at these other teams, they may make the playoffs, you know, if something happens. But you're looking at the Nationals, who got a four-game lead starting tonight. For a while there, they had the best record in baseball. And you have to contribute all of that to you know, the front office and how they're doing things. So at this point, I'd have to look at Mike Rizzo.
Michael, your early vote for GM of the year goes to?
Well, I like the National as well, but in the interest of diversity, I'm going to say the Oakland A's and Billy Beane. We got a team that nobody expected to do anything. In fact, they were so expected not to do anything. You know where they opened the season? Phil, do you remember where they opened the season?
I do not.
Japan.
That's right. That's right.
In a game that wasn't even televised live, the opening of the Major League season, and they put together a group of players that have really overachieved, have worked well as a team. And, you know, Billy Beane's kind of reinventing himself in this team here. So I would go that direction if I couldn't go Washington Nationals.
Michael, scale of 1 to 10, in terms of Moneyball, the movie, how much did you like it?
It was a 6 for me.
A 6. How about you, Hank?
It was about a 5.5, 6 for me, too.
Wow. Wow, we'll have to say that for future weeks, because I gave it about an 8.5, but I'm very biased to movies that have anything to do with baseball. The Natural still gets a 9.9 on my list, so I'm a little bit biased.
Well,
you guys
know
what time it is. Let's move on to it.
Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the Real Sports Guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
Shout out to L-Dog at resistancedigital.com bringing us the dog of the week. Mike, we need more dogs. Who you got for us?
Nice. I'm going to pay a little love or give a little love to a guy that doesn't get much on our show, but he's had an amazing year. People talk about Aroldis Chapman and his dominating year this year, but I got a guy for you, Craig Kimbrell for the Atlanta Braves. And if I told you guys that Kimbrell has, one, a better ERA, a better whip, a better batting average against, he's striking out more guys per 9 innings, and he's striking out a higher percentage of guys as a closer than Aroldis Chapman, one, I don't think you'd believe me. But two, why don't we hear more about this guy? He's had an amazing season, a dominating season, and the fact that he doesn't throw 106, all right, he throws 101, you know, people should hear about this guy, and for that reason, he's my dog of the week.
Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats. We need more dogs.
Hank, who's your dog of the week?
Okay, my dog of the week, you know, I've been doing it for the last couple of weeks, and I'm not going to disappoint. I'm going to do it again this week. My dog of the week is not a baseball player, but a baseball announcer. Mr. Vin Scully, who's 84 years young, voice of the Dodgers, been behind the mic for over 60 years, announced earlier this week that he was going to come back and broadcast again next year. Now, why I make Mr. Scully the dog of the week? Back in the day, in the heyday of baseball, and for the last several years, baseball used to have a voice. You know, you could hear Ernie Harwell if you was here in Detroit, or Jack Buck if you was in St. Louis. You remember This Week in Baseball with Mel Allen. And you remember those great voices that was baseball. When it started in the springtime, you heard them, and then when it got to playoff time, you always heard some of the greatest calls in baseball history. And Mr. Vin Scully is a part of that same legacy. And here in 2012 and going into 2013, he is going to still be the voice of baseball for the Los Angeles Dodgers. So I salute you, Mr. Scully, and for that, you are this week's Dog of the Week.
We need more dogs.
And for my dog of the week, I'm kind of piggybacking on you a little bit, Hank. I'm going with the Magic Johnson's Dodgers ownership team. I can't even say they made a splash. I mean, they did a huge cannonball, you know, in terms of what they did, bringing all these players from Boston to the Dodgers. In my mind, Magic is kind of bringing the NBA model to baseball, trying to get star power, trying to bring the fans back to the Dodgers. You know, this is a team beginning of the season most of us didn't think had a shot to be in playoff contention, especially with all the drama that was going on with the family that owned it, with the divorce and everything else. So my dog of the week is to the Dodgers new ownership team. So we got about 10 minutes left in the show. Fellas, let's talk about teams that are pushing for playoff spots. And I'm just going to ask you one question. Are they in or are they out? So we have a couple of fringe teams in each division. Let's start out with the American League. We've got the Angels, who are currently 10 back in the West, 4.5 back in the wild card. The Orioles are 3 back in the East. They are leading the wild card along with the A's, and who are 5.5 games back in the West. So, Hank, do you think that the A's, Angels, and Orioles are all pretenders? They'll be in, out, a combination? Give us your thoughts.
The Angels, I'm going to say, is a pretender at this point, and I didn't think I'd say that when the season started. But I look at the Angels having too many teams to try to overcome. They come down the stretch against the A's, the Rangers, and the Mariners, who's been pitching everywhere, pitching very well. The White Sox are thrown in there for good measure. So I think they got too many teams to overcome. As far as the Orioles is concerned, I'm also saying no. I think that the fact that they don't have enough firepower in at the plate outside of Adam Jones and Barcakis, they're going to struggle. I look at them coming down the stretch with the Yankees, the A's, the Rays, and again, they're not enough firepower. And for the A's, again, I think the A's are going to make a push, but what's going to kill them is down the stretch in September when they have to go against the Angels, the Tigers, and the Rangers. And with them now being a little short in the pitching staff, with Bartolo Colon gone for the season, I think they struggle as well. So I think all three of these teams are pretenders.
Michael, I know you're over there, man, biting your tongue. Have at them.
Wait. If they're all three pretenders, who's making the playoffs, Hank?
I'm looking at the Rays. I'm looking at either the White Sox and the Tigers. If one of them is going to be with the division, the other one is going to take the other wild card spot. And obviously, I think the Rangers walk away with the West.
We went 52 minutes, Michael, before we had a Tigers reference. Go right ahead.
Hey, I did good.
you know what? I always liked I'm not sure if it was Bill Parcells who said it, but in the end, you are what your record says you are. And three-quarters of the way through the year, the Angels have been a horrible disappointment. You know? They've got the talent, and they're just not getting it done. The Orioles, on paper, I still don't like their team, but, man, they're winning. They're winning. So I got to say the Angels are out. And at this point, the Orioles and A's are in. And this will be, in the A's case, I think the weighted schedule and playing, you know, some of those teams out west is going to help them. But, you know, if the Orioles done it for 120 games, why can't they do it for 160? So I like those teams in. I think that, and in my head, here's the vision I have, guys. There used to be the NBA video game where you got to play with two superstars, right? And it was two.
Yeah. Jam.
And NBA Jam. And to me, the Angels are that team, right? You got Mike Trout and Albert Pujols and a bunch of other guys. Now, Jerry Rivers having a good year. Same with the Tigers, okay? They got great talent, but as a team, you know, they've been in this funk for too long. Why should you be behind the Chicago White Sox unless that's where you end up as a team, and maybe you should be there? So I'm going to go on the underdog thing. I'm going to say the Orioles and A's and the Angels are watching.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me?
Let's shift on over to the National League, unless you want to take another swing at him, Hank.
No, he makes a valid point, but I look down the stretch and see who these teams have got to play. And when I look up and I see Detroit playing the 16 games against Oakland, Chicago, I'm sorry, against the Twins, the Royals, and the Indians, I just have a hard time thinking when I know that the A's and the rest of these teams have got to play the Yankees and the Rays, that they're not going to come out of there with a victory. I mean, believe it. They're finishing up in the Central, and that division sucks. So,
yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
So we have All teams have between 32 to 34 teams. Games left, approximately 20% left in the season. Let's shift over to the National League, where the two teams we have on the hot seat tonight are the Dodgers, who are currently three back in the West, and two back in the wild card, and the Pirates, who are 9.5 back in the Central. Michael, we'll start with you. Dodgers, Pirates, they make it, don't make it. What are your thoughts on these two teams?
I think those are the two teams out. And the team that doesn't get enough credit in this is the Atlanta Braves, who have, put together a really good stretch here. When the Washington Nationals were running away from everybody, Atlanta kept them on their toes. And that's a team that not a lot of people know, myself included. They're just not a flashy team, but they're setting the pace. And to me, it comes down to the Cardinals versus the Pirates and the Dodgers. And even though I can't stand the Cardinals, they have a professional lineup. They have a very good pitching staff. I think they're poised to be a similar team as they were last year, getting into the wild card and with the ability to do some major damage in the playoffs if they get there. So I like Atlanta and St. Louis, and I think these two teams are going home. I'm already hearing talk about Pittsburgh being happy with an above 500 season, and that's too bad.
Hank, talk to us.
Okay, listen, I cannot, in clear conscience, say that the Dodgers are not going to make the playoffs. RJ would roll over somewhere, okay? We got no way I'm going to say that the Dodgers don't make the playoffs. They have to make the playoffs, in my opinion. But I'm going to tell you why, not just because of our little wager, but I think that down the stretch run, when I look at what the Dodgers have, okay, they finished the season against the Padres and the Rockies. Okay, I believe that down the stretch is where the Cabrera loss for the Giants is really going to start to come into play, down the stretch run, okay? I think the Dodgers are going to be able to outslug some teams down the stretch. The Pirates, unfortunately, as Mike said, they're going to be happy to be above 500. They don't have enough firepower coming down the stretch. They've got a favorable September, but their August is hell. They're playing the Dodgers and the Cardinals, and they finish up the regular season with the Reds. So, I think that by them finishing above 500, unfortunately, I think what you said is true. They'll be satisfied, but the Dodgers have to make the playoffs.
I agree. Mike?
Sir?
You have something to add?
No, I mean, he sold his soul to the Dodgers in April, so he can't go back on it now. And to me, it goes back to a conversation we had a couple weeks ago at the trading deadline and saying, if you were the Pittsburgh Pirates, why were you not all in? Why did you not go out and get the best team you could and say, there's no guarantee we're coming back here next year? There's no guarantee. They rested their hopes on Garrett Jones, on Neil Walker, and it's not Pablo Sandoval. Who did they get from the Marlins?
Wandy Ramirez, but they didn't get him from they got him from the Padres.
Rodriguez. But anyway, they went out and they got no significant upgrades. They did exactly what they always do. They got middle-of-the-road guys that may or may not impact their team. And guess what? They're going to finish out of the playoffs again. And actually, when you look at the schedule next year, you're not going to pick the Pirates first in that division. You're not even going to pick them second. You may pick them fourth behind the Brewers.
Yeah.
It's just sad.
It really is, because they were a nice little story early. So, and I would even said I'd like to see them try to really, do something down the stretch. Doing exactly what they did last time, and that's...
Oh.
So, to Inside the Park, realsportsguys.com. Fellas, I'm going to give you 10 seconds apiece, 10, 20 seconds apiece to break down. If you have one player of time to team with, 20 seconds.
Player do what?
One player of all time, player in the history of baseball that you can start your franchise with, who would it be?
Oh, shoot. Bob Gibson.
Bob Gibson. How about you, Michael?
Well, I went Felix, my player to start my team with. To go with Cy Young. How about that?
How about that?
Love it. I love it. Bill T filling in for RJ Page. Back 8:30 Central next week. Thanks for listening in. RealSportsGuys.com.
All game over, Travis.